This podcast is brought to you by WRFL, Radio Free Lexington. Find us online at WRFL.fm. Catch us on your FM radio while you're in Central Kentucky at 88.1 FM, all the way to the left. Thank you for listening, and please be sure to subscribe.
This is Mick. You're listening to Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. Good morning to you. Thanks for tuning in. 25 after 7 in the a.m. on apparently what I've been told is the first day of fall. So I got my last summer song out a little while ago there, I suppose. After this, RFL has a strict policy against summer songs if it's not summer.
That's a good policy. Gotta keep things orderly.
I know. Here especially. These kids today, they can't have nice things.
Get off my lawn.
They can't talk about the wrong season in the wrong season.
You're confusing me now.
I know. That's what I'm trying to do. Otherwise, you get ahead of me.
It's early.
Leif Erickson's here.
Hello.
We heard the Monkees song, You Bring the Summer, from the surprisingly great recent Monkees album, which is called, he said, looking to see what it's called, Good Times. It's a really, you know, you think about the Monkees and you just think, yeah, the Monkees. But they're more complicated than that.
Yeah, my daughter kind of turned me on to the Monkees, actually. They're way more complicated than that.
They started out as like a totally, you know, completely manufactured entity designed, you know, to appeal to the kids.
Right.
And then it turned out that several of them were pretty good songwriters and that they had some charisma of their own. And some of them like to get kind of weird, too.
I think they've always had trouble getting the respect because of those early years.
Yeah.
They were just a gimmick act because, right. You know, the whole Beatles thing. Let's make some mop tops.
And then they made that crazy movie called Head. Have you ever seen Head?
I have not seen that.
It's like their version of, well, again, so I'm about to, like, you know, marginalize them by saying it's their version of the Magical Mystery Tour, which it's not, but it's a weird, weird movie.
My daughter has probably seen it. I'll ask her about it.
Yeah, I guarantee she has. I know your daughter, and she's certainly seen it. let's see. So, yeah, we heard You Bring the Summer, which is a really interesting, the album called Good Times includes... There's a variety of originals, but then they also, to your point, sir, about them not getting their respect, like a number of sort of ultra-winning songwriters wrote songs for them to do. That was an Andy Partridge song, the guy from XTC. Clearly an Andy Partridge song if you're an XTC nerd at all. You're like, it has a sound to it. And then like the guy from Death Cab for Cutie wrote an incredible song called Me and Magdalena, and there's several others. But so that's my tip of the hat, late as usual.
He's not wearing a hat, folks. He is lying to you on the air. I'm going to contact the FCC. This is going to be a big blow up.
Oh, you just say that because you're such a hat wearer.
That's true. I am wearing a hat, folks. So
listen,
one of us is.
I'll make a confession here. I've been trying to find the hat, which is an awkward proposition. It's something you generally don't want to involve other people in. I've been looking for the hat.
You know, Target has decent hats sometimes.
Is that right?
It hasn't for a while. But, sometimes you'll go in there and it'll be some really cool hats.
I was at the Roots and Heritage Festival a few weeks ago, and they had lots of hats there. And the more I looked, I was like, too much brim, not enough brim, not enough brim, too much brim, mostly not enough brim.
It is hard to find that perfect hat. That's why I've been wearing this one for about 3 years. And it's like, don't let it go. Don't let it go.
let's see. So, let's see. We've got... What else did we play back there? I played something by, in addition to Simon and Garfunkel, or Lemonheads doing Simon and Garfunkel, the Mrs. Robinson, from, of course, the film.
The Graduate.
The Graduate, the original, that is.
Was there a remake of The Graduate?
I don't know why I said that.
Okay.
I know. The original of the song, Simon and Garfunkel.
I saw The Graduate at Studio Players a few years ago. They did a stage version of
it. Is that right?
It was quite good. Yeah.
You weren't in it.
I was not, but it was enjoyable.
Yeah.
Yeah. Studio Players does some good shows.
That is, it's a Mike Nichols movie, I think.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care how many times you've seen it, it's wildly thought provoking.
Plastics.
It had plastics. it's funny. It's poignant. It has one of the greatest, murkiest endings of any movie that I've ever seen.
Are you trying to seduce me, Mick?
Well, That was through email. I'm so much more attractive through email.
It's kind of a bunker here, you know, so yeah. I don't know if this would be the place to seduce somebody. It's a little creepy.
Under the Whitehall classroom building, no one can hear you scream.
I think Isaac Asimov said that, I believe. He was here. He was down here.
So what happened? This was the anniversary of
Simon and Garfunkel's concert in the park, Central Park. Yeah, they were trying to raise money for Central Park. That's why they had the concert. And it only raised like $51,000 cash, but it got the word out.
It's like a dirty secret that, you know, I shouldn't say this. Does RFL have any fundraising concerts coming up? Fundraising concerts are like, they're a wash a lot of the time.
I think it's more about getting the message out. You know, like they said that what I was reading was that a lot of people donated later because of hearing about the cause.
Yeah.
They were supposed to go on and do some more recording together, but didn't work out so well.
Okay, so the concert, what year was that? I remember it, but I sort of don't remember it.
Didn't write that down. It's in the 80s, 85 maybe?
Yeah, so see, this was late. This was kind of late for them.
Yeah, and they had already, you know, split up because they have a tendency to bicker. Maybe it's because it's like, hey, Paul, you have a career and I don't. And I no offense to Art Garfunkel. It's just that's weird, that imbalance of success after Simon and Garfunkel. Because Garfunkel has a beautiful voice. You know, he's
right.
He probably had the more ethereal, beautiful voice of the two. But
then you look at that songwriting credit line, though. See, there's the problem
true.
There.
That's true. Yeah, and he was doing the harmonies a lot of times, too.
Yeah.
So you got to find somebody to do harmonies with that where y'all don't hate each other about 80% of the time.
Yeah.
Little
and,
things
you know,
like
that. That can only last so long.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. We also heard Nick Cave back there. Happy birthday to Nick Cave.
Happy birthday, Nick. I know you're listening.
Right. We heard Mermaids from the incredible album of his last album called Push the Sky Away. And every Nick Cave album, you know, it's very tempting to say every Nick Cave album is incredible. I don't really know that for a fact, but I certainly have some intensely venerable favorites. And supposedly his new album, Skeleton Tree, is supposed to be great, but it's about the untimely death of his adult son who fell off a cliff, and I cannot listen to it because Nick Cave is too capable of communicating enormous grief and pain through song. It's like that album's like kryptonite to me. I can't listen to that.
Well, a lot of his albums and songs are like that without a death involved. It's
right.
Already pretty dark. I'm
right.
not saying
no,
that
I'm,
as a compliment, but
this album strikes me as possibly heroin.
Yeah. Rough.
So anyway, but happy birthday to Nick Cave. And like I said, this is Trivial Thursdays on WRFL. We've got a great show for you.
We do. It's true. Certified.
Coming up later in the show, in the next hour, Jenny Rice is going to be here. I've been trying to get Jenny Rice, who's a professor of rhetoric and media at UK, and also one of the most endearing online personalities that I know of. And I've been trying to get her on the show for years. And the only way that I managed to do that, it turns out, is by minorly assisting her to co-found to found a storytelling series.
Yeah.
So I worked with her to find something for her to come talk on the radio about. Not that she was like, I can't think of anything, but I came up with something that she has no choice but to come on and talk mm-hmm. about because she's the founder of it. So we're going to talk about the Horse's Mouth storytelling series, which just between you and me and the radio audience, I named.
That's a great name.
It was instant. It just like, what's it called? Obviously, it's called the Horse's Mouth. So anyway, I'll try to shut up about that. And then right around the corner, after we play something, fill in the blank, Travis Robinson is going to be here from the Cluck Chicken Keepers, Chicken Coop, Downtown Chicken. He'll help me straighten out exactly what it's called.
And we're going to see how many chicken puns we can come up with, I think.
Oh, it's probably going to happen, isn't it? That just exhausts me.
I'm sure he's never heard those. So it's going to be all fresh to him.
It's their fault because, I mean, you know, they call their organization Cluck, so.
Yeah, good cluck with that. See, I've already started, and that wasn't even a good one. I was putting out the weak material first.
It was a gut shot.
Get it out of the way.
So what do you got? Is there something that we can, is there another little bit of music trivia that we mentioned? That there's all kinds of music trivia.
There's all kinds of music trivia today. Bowie kicked off his Ziggy Stardust tour in 1972 when I was a young lad of 1 year old. He kicked that off in Cleveland. I was not there at one. I was trying to get there, but I couldn't catch a cab. Cabs will not stop for a one-year-old in the middle of the road, strangely.
Yeah.
It's one of the principles of the universe.
Yeah. I just want to say, that was Louis Jordan, by the way. That's not what I wanted to say. What I want to say is it's a lot easier to find songs about chickens than it is to find songs about painting and art and literature. A lot of my guests on Trivial Thursdays tend to come from the background of painting, art, and literature. And I keep playing the same songs over and over again. Most notably, Elvis Costello's Every Day I Write the Book for writers, you know? I ought to just take a poll and get some more options. Chickens, though, lots of chicken songs. Why is that, Travis Robinson, do you think?
I have no idea. But one thing I do know, if you write more than one chicken song in your life, I think it's against the law.
That is so true. Yeah.
Let me introduce you to the Juggernaut Jug Band here in just a little while from Louisville, Kentucky. They have many chicken songs. And a group that I tracked down over the years, like over the time from when I first heard them until the internet began to sort of pick up speed, if you will.
So you used to be a groupie?
I'm kind of a groupie. I've posted videos that I recorded with my iPhone. I was like one of those people in the front of a, you know. You ever see somebody at a concert who's up front with a video? They're making a video. Like, thanks, buddy, for doing your super high production video that I'm going to get to watch and just be amazed by. That was me with the Juggernaut Jug Band a couple years ago at Kentucky Crafted when they played downtown.
Hopefully you did it horizontally at least.
I am a professional here. Although I'm starting to wonder if the vertical video is gaining some credence.
Really?
In much the same way that everything else is going to hell.
Those of us with less than stellar eyesight like the horizontal videos.
And that's the way it goes. That's like TV or something. It's supposed to be that way.
So Instagram kind of cut the corners and went square, I guess.
I know. I think they thought that was really smart. I think they're all smart. And now you've noticed whenever the news, like, you know, if the news sometimes will show people's videos. And, you know, usually the person that's going to make a video and send it to the news is going to make it vertical. Mm-hmm. And so they got that trick, right, where you sort of triple the video and make the two sides blurry.
That's what that is.
Yeah.
It's all becoming clear.
Yeah, it's that. That's the sound of the apocalypse.
you and I had a video credit mix-up once in the Herald Leader. I don't know if you remember that. I took a video of one of the center pit blasts, and somehow when they posted it online, they gave you credit for it.
Did they post your video and they gave me credit, or
vice versa? I don't remember. Uh-huh. It was some kind of kerfuffle.
Because it was a kerfuffle.
We got in a fist fight. It was terrible. We kissed and made up, though.
It was a lot.
Everything's good now. Everybody, don't worry. Don't get in your cars and drive over here for a reconciliation. We're fine now. Sorry, Travis, that you had to be here for this.
Okay. It is early.
It was a kerfuffle, though.
That word isn't used enough.
No, it sure is. Or maybe it has been now.
Did David Bowie use that word? That seems like a word Bowie would have used, doesn't it? Kerfuffle in one of his songs, not related to anything.
He was on the Muppets.
You know what I like about Bowie is that he did this brilliant thing where he's just like, I'm going to make hits and then like say all these weird things as a pop star. Like you could just make hits. Like William Faulkner wrote Sanctuary because he wanted to buy a better house. He's like, I'm going to write a bestseller, I think. How do you do that? How do you just decide you're going to make this huge hit so that you can do something else you want to do? Why aren't you making hits constantly? It's a good question.
Well, I mean, your writing career has wound you up here as the
esteemed position. I'm bona fide here,
perennial guest host of the morning radio show.
So it can get you places, folks. Keep writing.
Don't give up on your dreams.
Don't,
Travis. You wear many hats in this town, but you're not wearing a hat this morning, I notice.
No, I left the hat at home. My hair's still drying, Mick.
It's like a chicken hat, though, right? The hat that you have.
It's definitely
like
a chicken hat.
Now, how many years has it been since the founding of, it's called CLUC, right?
Cooperative Lexington Urban Chicken Keepers.
Yeah. Now, a little bit of cleverness. We'll give credit where credit is due, I believe, to
Anita Courtney. Mickey yeah. Wright.
Mickey Wright.
Sean Burns.
Yeah.
John...
And so this was how many years ago, did you say?
I want to say it was 7 years ago.
Right.
Now this just a bunch of friends getting together, kept chickens. They wanted to talk about them.
They kept, and when you say kept chickens, you don't mean like kept them from doing something else. You like have them in your backyard, right?
Yeah, you keep them in your backyard, typically.
Which
don't have them in your house.
Now, did anything have to, right? Did anything have to change for that to start happening in Lexington? So there's a lot of people, or some people, more if you have your way.
That's right.
Who keep chickens in their backyard.
That's right.
Now, sometimes you'll hear people say, or, you know, in some cities maybe even, it's like, no, you can't do that. That's against ordinance. Did anything have to change in Lexington, or just nobody thought to do it?
I don't think so. I think it had been a law on the books that you could have chickens till since who knows when. Maybe it never changed.
Okay.
I know that roosters are a little bit of a problem. But keeping chickens, you can have as many chickens in your backyard as you want.
But even like, I mean, even chicken keepers don't really like roosters, right?
No. That's my experience.
Yeah.
So the question on everyone's mind is, do you have a lot of problems with electrophobia?
Electrophobia?
A-L-E-K-R-O-phobia. A-L-E-K-T-R-O-phobia. Electrophobia.
People being afraid of chickens.
There you got it. Ding, 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 ding.
I think it's true for some spouses of chicken keepers.
Yeah, so I go down to night market, and I have usually have a live chicken. And it's amazing the attention I get when I'm holding a chicken for people to pet versus when I'm not holding a chicken for people to pet. So I get a lot of attention, but there are always people who are standing in the back very politely, not sticking their hand out to pet the chicken. So, yeah, I think there's plenty of those people, but I don't really come across them a whole lot because typically if they're around my chickens, it's on purpose. So, yeah.
Now, how,
not in my experience.
Now, you guys are the Cluck Group. You guys, this is how many years have you done the tour?
This is the sixth year, I think.
Okay,
I'm pretty sure.
So almost as many years.
I'm calling it the sixth year, whether it is or not, because it's the Sixth Street Chicken Chase.
Yeah. And is that have you guys rebranded yourself from the Cluck Tour of Coops?
Tour de Coops.
Okay.
And I just sort of decided by fiat to say
that's not punny anymore.
Boo.
So now it's a Sixth Street Chicken Chase, which isn't to say
it's not every year is going to be that. It's the Cluck Coop Tour. Specifically is the Sixth Street Chicken Chase. It's hard to say 10 times fast, but because most of the chicken coops are along Sixth Street. And it's the sixth year, it just turns out to be.
Yeah.
That seemed a appropriate moniker for this year.
Now, what's it like to keep chickens if you're trying to convince someone? This is a tour, by the way.
That's right. So you go into people's backyards and check out their chickens and their coop set up and all that.
And the coops are all kind of different, right? That's part of the charm of it?
That's right, yeah. Everybody's got their own way of setting it up, and that is definitely part of the charm. You can get as creative as you want or reuse old pallets and throw it together like a shack. I mean, it's, you know, can go all different directions.
So what's something about raising chickens that you did not expect when you got into it? Is there anything that surprised you or that people might need to be aware of that they don't think of?
I think I find it easier now than I ever thought it would be. It's kind of in between having a cat, which is really easy most of the time, depending on the cat. Versus having a dog, it's kind of in between there. They're definitely not as loud as dogs, for sure. They're a little bit more work than a cat. You got to pick up the eggs every day, but it's a treat. But then you've got the eggs. It's a little treat, yeah. And you really don't have to clean the litter box like you do with a cat. So,
I've read that hens lay about 245 eggs a year. On average.
It depends on the situation, depends on how much light they get, depends on if they've run out of water or not. You got to keep them watered. Depends on the breed. There's a lot of different things that can affect a chicken's egg-laying capabilities. I've heard, on average, a chicken is built in with the ability to lay up to 400 eggs in a lifetime. But that, again, that's just sort of... You know, whoever has done those tests,
quiverful chickens, Duggar chickens. They're trying to make as many eggs as possible. That's all in their master plan. take over the world with chickens. It's coming, folks. It's coming.
So here's a point that I have probably only become slightly clearer on in recent years, but like chicken eggs don't necessarily have chickens inside of them.
Absolutely. Anyone who,
does,
right.
If you think you can eat chicken eggs and be and you're never you're, it's not going to happen. You're not going to because
you need a rooster.
You need a rooster.
Yeah, that's right.
So the chickens lay the eggs no matter what.
That's right. So fertilized egg is a lot different than just a regular egg that you without a rooster.
Yeah.
Unfertilized, that is.
And then so most people that keep chickens in Lexington, they're not trying to make more chickens.
That's right. Yeah.
Right.
Now that would be in an urban setting. I think most people on a farm probably have a rooster, and that's not necessarily because they want to make more chickens, but because they want to protect their flock.
Mm-hmm.
A rooster will go a long way towards helping out his hens to keep them safe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because roosters are kind of badasses, or I mean, like
absolutely, yeah, they can be.
Uh huh.
Some of them are not quite as hardy as others, but just depends.
Are they a lot? I mean, like, you know, I can't help but think of Foghorn Leghorn from Looney Tunes. You know, I don't know.
Foghorn's the best. Protect y'all.
That's right. From the little baby chicken hawk.
I say.
That ain't no way to make an airplane, boy.
So how much growth have you seen in terms of chicken keeping in? I know I've thought about it. I haven't been convinced yet, but I know that I've seriously considered it a number of times now.
Yeah, I think there has been a huge growth. I can't really put a number on that, but since I've been involved with Cluck, mm-hmm. it seems like there are constantly new people asking to get in to chickens. One of the things that Cluck offers is a free consultation, for instance, to come to your house and mm-hmm. check out your backyard and help you out. Getting started, and that's kind of a regular thing that happens these days. Probably 20 a year, I would guess. But who knows how many people are starting and don't need a consultation exactly.
Right.
So yeah, I think there's been a huge uptick in chicken keeping and the interest in chickens in general. And I think it's also seen in the success of the Cluck Tour, which is coming up on Sunday.
Mm-hmm. Now, let people know some of the details about that. I've been on it several times, and it's really cool because it's kind of, you know, it's like this. First of all, it's a great walk or, yeah. you know, meandering around on your bike, or you can drive if you want. But, like,
typically the coops have been so far apart in the past that mm-hmm. you've almost had to drive to get them all, mm-hmm. to see them all. But this time you can actually walk or bike easily. Walking, I think, would be just as easy as biking. And there are 8 coops, starts at 1:00. You can get your tickets online or at Al's Beer Garden and then, or check out all the information online,
mm-hmm.
Facebook page and, clucklex.org.
Okay. You can go with your friends or you can,
absolutely,
I mean,
yeah.
it's self-guided. Is that what they call it?
It's self-guided. Yeah.
It's like an open house tour, but you don't go in people's houses.
That's
you go
right.
in their backyards.
You go in their backyards. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
You know, in vaudeville days, the word chicken was considered one of the funniest words because it has words that have K in them were considered like among the funniest words. And that is true. Chicken is a funny word. Yak, that's funny. Kerfuffle. We've come full circle. Circle. Get it, folks? It's K sounds. We're going to be laughing all morning. Every K sound.
Until it hurts.
It
it's time to play a chicken song, okay? And then come back and talk to Travis Robinson of Cluck a little bit more and hear some more about the Cluck Tour this Sunday.
Sounds right? good. That's this Sunday. That's right.
Let's see. So we've got, I'm going to give my studio guests a choice here. We've got one of 3 songs by the Juggernaut Jug Band. There's Chicken Pie. There's Chicken Tree. There's Chicken Ain't Nothing But a Bird. Yeah.
I vote for Chicken Ain't Nothing But a Bird.
That sounds good to me, too.
I think that you have made the right choice. I happen to know that is one of the finest chicken songs there is.
It's just very straightforward, too.
So this is some music from Louisville's own Juggernaut Jug Band, who, when they're not doing chicken songs, also do incredible Jug Band Led Zeppelin covers.
Hey there. If you're enjoying this podcast from WRFL Lexington, you may enjoy our live radio stream at WRFL.fm. And, of course, via radio at 88.1 FM in the Central Kentucky area. We have a wide variety of programs you're sure to enjoy. Just go to wrfl.fm/schedule and see what programs appeal most to you. Thanks again for listening to this podcast from WRFL Lexington.
How could we accidentally forget about Hazel Atkins the West Virginia wild man of rock and roll, who did an entire album of chicken songs, at least, and was kind of a sort of foundational inspiration for WRFL in some ways.
I believe that he had chickens.
No doubt, after hearing
his songs, I believe that he had chickens.
He is not from Chicken Bristle, though.
Probably not from Chicken
Folks,
Bristle.
There are two Chicken Bristles. We looked this up on the break. Two of them, one in Illinois and one in Kentucky, a little southwest of here. Looks like it's maybe 25 minutes, probably.
Road trip.
Near Junction City.
Oh,
let's go down to Chicken Bristle and take some chickens down there. We'll pick up some chickens. We're going to have a chicken day in Chicken Bristle. Come on, now.
We're here with Travis Robinson of Cluck, playing chicken songs and whatnot.
Good times.
Yeah, so we heard Chicken Hop there from Poultry in Motion. I think you'll appreciate that, Leif Erickson.
I do. It's a nice pun.
The Haslackens Chicken Collection, 1955 to 1999. Haslackens, who came and performed for WRFL several times, is one of the most idiosyncratic human beings I've ever met in my life.
I remember those days.
And he would be escorted around by, I remember the story of J. Todd Dockery, the artist and writer who had a particular penchant for Haslackens, so much so that in addition to booking him, he got a telephone call from Haslackens like the day before he was supposed to play here asking if he could come pick him up. Yeah. Which he did.
I think he did some drawings
in West Virginia.
Of Haslackens too. I think he's done some drawings.
And then he would take him out to eat, and he loved, his favorite thing was to go to Denny's. And what he would ask for, and what Todd learned to get for him, was simply a plate of meat. They're like, can you just bring a plate of meat for him? And they're like, well, what kind? Just all of them, all
chicken?
The different meats.
I was going to say, yeah, just
it
chicken.
All tastes like chicken.
It all tastes like chicken, that's right.
Okay, so, but back to the tour of Coops, which is this Sunday.
1 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And after party from 4 to 6 at Al's Beer Garden.
Yeah.
Little old time music.
There'll be like chicken-themed cocktails. I hope not.
No. No chicken-themed cocktails.
Well, you know, in the Middle Ages, in the Middle Ages, chicken soup was considered an aphrodisiac, so you guys should probably bring that back. You know?
How do you know that?
Whip up a batch.
That was crazy.
You're not supposed to know that.
I know many useless things, some of them about chickens.
Sounds good.
Let's see. Chicken soup. This is great for anybody that thinks they might want to have chickens?
Absolutely, yeah. Or anybody who has chickens and just wants to talk to other people that have chickens.
Uh-huh. Or if you just like to
share stories,
grab the little buggers.
Or grab a chicken.
I've become fond of that lately. Like, I visited a friend's chicken coop, you know, to feed the chickens sometimes and collect the eggs and stuff. And at first you don't think you can catch them. And then, I don't know, it's weird. Chickens are peculiar animals.
You can't catch them.
Former dinosaurs, right?
Oh, right, yeah.
If you're feeling peckish, you can't catch them. Ladies and gentlemen, thank you.
It's tough in here. Let's see. So now this is such a thing that's happening here and in a lot of other places too.
Absolutely, yeah. The coop tour thing has caught on all over.
And keeping chickens in general.
And keeping chickens in general, yeah.
Sometimes people need help with this, and you've started a company called Floyd's.
That's right, Floyd's Farm and Home.
Yeah.
I help with chicken things.
Right, like chicken.
Chicken feed.
Chicken, like kind of great chicken feed that's hard to get otherwise, right?
Chickens,
yeah.
Little pullets.
So you like, so Floyd's helps people get started if they need to.
That's right,
yeah. If they're like, I don't know how to get some chickens. I know how to get them at the grocery store, that's about it.
Yeah, that's right. Just call
and
me.
And then I think it's too late. Cool. Well, I'm sure that people... And it's a great event. It's one of my favorite little downtown
Lexington
things.
Yeah, it should be a lot of fun.
Yeah, so here's the good weather. Although one year I went and it was raining, I went anyway and it was still fun. It was awesome.
And there were tons of people that year.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Awesome. Travis Robinson of Cluck.
Thanks for having me.
Sure. If people want to find out more, Facebook is a good place for
Facebook,
is that right?
Yep. Cooperative Lexington Urban Chicken Keepers or clucklex.org.
Yeah.
You can also find some more information at seedleaf.org.
Okay.
And I hear the chicken lady is going to be there from Kids in the Hall.
Yeah?
Chicken lady? Nobody? Nothing?
He heard that. Okay. He did hear that, though.
You may have heard that.
He hears a lot of things.
I heard it come out
Only
of my
some
mouth.
Of them are real. Okay, let's see. We got time for it. Looks like one more chicken song, maybe from Haslackens here.
Let's do it.
I think what we'll play is the Chicken Wobble.
Ooh, that's a good one.
And this is also going out to my friend, my young friends Lily and Lucy, who I understand are listening. So, and they like chickens.
Chickens
too.
Wobble, but they don't fall down.
We'll see about that, buddy. I know you heard. We're going to be back with Jenny Rice of the Horse's Mouth series, so stick around. Trivial Thursday's here. I'm your host, Mick, and I just offered the provocative words to my guests here in the studio. Let's talk about Gary Newman for a second. Jenny Rice is here, by the way. Good morning, Jenny.
Good morning.
Gary Newman, that was his biggest hit, his only American hit, really, Cars, which came out on this day in like
1979.
Okay, I was going to say 77. So he was a total one-hit wonder in America, but he is like highly regarded in a lot of ways and is still doing incredibly cool stuff. When he's busy not being a robot. In England.
Oh, okay.
Or Great Britain. Which one? I know. I always get confused about that.
He went to number one on the UK album charts this day, also with The Pleasure Principle, which I'm not familiar with.
The whole album?
Yeah.
Now, see, now I'm hating that I played Cars, just reinforcing his one-hit wonderness. Because Metal is great. Airplanes are great. Not the planes, but the song Airplanes. And that's an awesome, awesome album. He was a forerunner of robot rock, as my daughter likes to call it.
So I thought maybe he covered Janet Jackson, Pleasure Principle. Was that Janet Jackson? I've got the wrong person, haven't I?
That sounds about right.
Yeah, something like that.
My personal Janet Jackson expert isn't here right now, but she might be waking up about now. I'm not sure. So yeah, that's the trivia there, 79.
79,
And then we heard some more chicken music, I think, before that. Did we? I think some Hazel Atkins from Poultry in Motion with the Chicken Shake, I believe, is what we heard. And thanks to Travis Robinson of Cluck for coming down. Of Cluck and Floyd's Farm Supply is his other jam. Both of which are pretty dedicated to helping people who want to have chickens. Do you have chickens, Jenny?
No, but I do know people who raise chickens.
Right.
I know we all do, so that doesn't really mean anything. I was going to say you're a racist.
Some
of my best friends raise chickens, so I'm good.
No, I know. I don't,
like,
I don't
metaphorically,
have chickens
it's
myself.
Not for me.
I know.
Like metaphorically raise chickens? What would that mean exactly?
I don't know.
Let's unpack this.
I metaphorically raise chickens.
All right. Good. Good. Somebody's got to do it.
We all have at least one friend who raises chickens.
I wouldn't want my own kids raising chickens. You know, it's fine for other people.
Jenny, I'm so happy to have you here.
I'm very glad.
I've tried over the years. Did you hear me joking? I was teasing you this morning about the diabolical way in which I've gotten you to be on this show is by playing a minor part in helping you create an event which would compel you to be on the show.
Oh, I'm happy. I'm really happy. You played actually a major part because you helped us hook up with the Parachute Factory.
I do what I can. I'm a Gladwellian super connector.
Yeah, you really are.
They have a cream for that now.
Need a lot of it. So, like, this is something that now. Let's see. So, Jenny, you are an associate professor in. The department. Is it a department?
Yeah.
Can we say department on the air?
Yeah.
Of writing, rhetoric, and digital studies.
Yeah. We call it Word.
Those things all go together?
They do now. We squish them together. I think the fact that it's Word, it's an encapsulation of really what we do. So we work with words of various kinds. So all those things are related somehow.
How do you get Word out of that? I'm looking at it.
Writing, rhetoric, digital, and then technically it's words.
The O is implied.
Oh, right. Okay.
That's
where
you go, oh, like the kids. When you have a rhetorical argument, you go, oh, that's where the O comes in.
That's right. Yeah.
I'm trying, folks.
Forget the vowel.
That program has been going on at UK
we've been a department now, I think, for 3 years, okay. I think. 4 years. But before that, we were kind of like this freestanding, weird division thing while we were waiting to get our departmental status.
Yeah.
But now we're a real live department.
That must be a hard form to find at UK.
Ooh.
Be your own department. Ooh. Where's the be your own department form?
I don't know how anybody finds forms.
BYOD.
Now, how does, just before we talk about the Horse's Mouth storytelling series, which I'm excited to talk about, how does rhetoric figure into? I think there's a lot of people probably like me that think they know what rhetoric means, but what does it mean to really study rhetoric, or how does rhetoric figure into our day-to-day sort of activity.
Well, it's weird because usually when people say rhetoric, it's always that bad thing. You know, like they'll say, that's just a bunch of rhetoric, or, you know, I want reality, not rhetoric. And then, so the way I talk about it is like, okay, everything is rhetorical in some sense, meaning like, you know, not just language, but the way that we kind of understand the world. We do it through designing things, the way that we name certain things, the way that we change names. I was just listening to, on the way here, I was listening to the story about, I guess, in the New York Times. They made a very, for journalists, this really, they ended up calling out Donald Trump, his birther stuff, as a lie. And they actually used the word lie in the New York Times. So on NPR, they were interviewing the editor saying, well, like, how did you decide to call it a lie? Because usually they'll say something like falsehood or something like that. And so the editor was explaining, here's why I think it's important to say this is a lie versus a falsehood, which is, you know, these are two different terms, could mean the same thing, but it has a very different connotation to say somebody's lying versus, you know, falsehood. So even something like that, the way that we choose words for something, you know, we see this, you know, there's this whole Skittles thing now happening, and you see that the way that you choose
What's the Skittles thing?
You know, Donald Trump Jr.'s Skittles refugee.
Oh, human so, I'm so I'm embarrassing out of touch sometimes because I just can't stand it. But
Okay,
other people know though.
Yeah. Okay. So the Skittles thing, which Mick doesn't know, but everybody else knows. But
I'm going to look on the computer.
It's on the internet.
Pretty offensive. Basically, comparing people to candy Skittles.
Yeah, refugees. Right. And so you know the way that you choose to phrase something, like we all do it, you know, and sometimes you hit the wrong thing with a certain audience that would have worked with a different set of people. And,
okay.
You know, I'm looking around this room, for example, and there's, you know, there's writing on the walls, there's posters everywhere. It's, you know, like this is an environment that is very welcoming and warm and fun.
Mm-hmm.
You could imagine if there was, you know, a whole different setup here, it'd send this different message.
More Nazi flags, for instance.
Yeah, that would send a way different message.
Did you see the my rhetorical thing there was I said more Nazi flags.
Yeah.
I was going to comment.
The one in the corner seems weird, but okay, just the one.
You know, do you find it interesting that rhetoric and apology, which both being argumentation, basically, have come to have these negative connotations? I find that pretty interesting.
Yeah, yeah.
And apology originally meant an explanation or an argument. Yeah.
Apologia. Yeah. Right. I'm actually, when I get done here, I'm going to walk over to my argument class. I'm teaching a class on argument. And it's not, you know, like fighting, but it's, you know, the way that you, you know, in big and small ways, just try to talk to somebody about something, you know, like see things. I want you to see things my way, or
go ahead, please.
Well, no, I was thinking about Facebook. You spend a lot of time on Facebook, Jenny.
I
sort of don't tell anyone. I'm sort of in love with you on Facebook because of your words, the way that you write, and that you sort of have a persona sort of.
Yeah, yeah.
That's connected to who you are, but it's also the written version of you. And so, but I think about Facebook and rhetoric and how a lot of people, I spend a lot of time walking around gnashing my teeth thinking about a rhetorical statement I want to make on Facebook.
Facebook
and
is
then I decide
rhetoric.
Not to do it. But a lot of the times when I think about what I want to post on Facebook, I believe what would be called rhetorical, where I want to have a position. I want to say, this is everybody.
Yeah.
Either Facebook or world. Hey, world. Blank, 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 blank.
Yeah, Facebook is rhetoric. Basically, you're putting yourself out there in a certain way. You're making this sort of established persona that on purpose that is designed to get reactions from people and to maybe sometimes change people's minds.
Hey, Facebook, Grape Nuts is the best cereal ever. That is all.
But even, you know, your persona, even when you get on there and you talk about your daughter, for example, you know, I know Mick Jeffries' persona. You have this, you know, you've got, you're a fun dad, you're a, you know, kind of like you look fun. And I think that's not not really you, but you know, you're putting forth this persona through the things that you choose to share and not share.
I've turned down the snark.
Yeah.
But I might turn it back up again. You know,
do it.
So,
do you show the Monty Python argument sketch per chance when you teach argument?
It's one of my husband's favorite things. He always says that if he ever taught a course in argument, that's the sketch that he would share.
I used to show it, but my students just sort of look dead eyed at it. They have no idea what I'm even showing.
Wrong audience.
Yeah, exactly. So, as much as I love it, I sort of stopped trying to use it.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the desired effect. Even though they lay out in the sketch what an argument is,
a
proposition, you know, organized. Formal proposition, but
maybe I should show that today.
It's pretty brilliant.
Yeah,
I'm here for an argument.
I'm prepping my class right here, right now.
There you go.
Yeah, I've got this like this. First of all, I hate the term pet peeve. It's one of my pet peeves. And I don't think this may just be more syntactical than having specifically to do with rhetoric. But there's a lot of people that confuse that use the phrase "I lied." When really what they mean is they were uninformed or ignorant about something.
Yeah.
There's like, oh, I'm sorry, I lied. You were supposed to be here at such and such
time. Bugs me too. Lies.
And I'm like, no. Yeah, you didn't lie. That was, you were uninformed.
Yes.
I don't know.
This feeds back into the other thing we had talked about coming on, I think, last year when I taught a course on BS.
Love this.
So I don't think I can actually say the full, even though that was the name of the class. But,
alas, no.
Okay, so I taught this course on BS, and we talked a lot about, so what is the difference between, say, lying, telling the truth, and then BS, which is this whole different category.
Uh-huh.
And it's really interesting because, you know, one of the essays that we read is by this philosopher who ends up saying, you know, there's a big difference. There's actually less of a difference between, say, the liar and the truth teller and the BSer, because the liar cares just as much about the truth as the truth teller does, you know, because you're trying to protect it
right.
from getting found out. The BSer doesn't really care one way or the other about truth because it's more about, I'll tell you whatever, you know, just to get you to, to do what you want to do. Yeah, like the truth, if the truth works, fine. If, you know, kind of embellishing the truth works, if a whole lie works, whatever.
Right. So BSers can be wildly entertaining.
Oh, yeah.
Well, kind of by way of analogy, a BSer is amoral, whereas a liar is immoral. That's just an analogical, maybe.
Yeah,
it's not literal, but it's kind of that same kind of distinction, I think.
So Jenny Rice is here, by the way. Jenny is associate professor in the Department of Writing, Rhetoric, and Digital Studies at UK. Mm-hmm. And while deeply ensconced in that, also a huge fan of storytelling.
Yeah.
And, you know, so sometimes I read your comments online and your comments will be kind of directed to a specific audience. I remember one comment that you said, sometimes especially around test time, sometimes your comments on Facebook will be addressed kind of to your students in general. And I remember one time I saw a comment of yours that said something like, when the semester's over, I will hug you so hard. I don't know if you remember that, but like, I felt like I was getting peeks into your stories and into the stories that I feel like you do a really interesting job of telling the story of telling some of your stories, not in the formal sense, but like what's really happening in the life of you know, Professor Rice with her students on a day-to-day basis, what it's like to be a teacher, what it's like to be a friend to students, what it's like to be a hard ass all at the same time, you know?
Yeah.
And so I like the multifacetedness.
Yeah.
Facetedness.
I like that about, I think that's probably why I am so, I would say probably addicted to Facebook, because I love the mundane detail. You know, when people will sometimes complain about, and they'll use Facebook like this platform, you know, to make these statements. And those are always less interesting to me than...
Me too.
Attention drivers who do not use your turn
signals. Yeah, like I just don't care about those kinds of things. I get more caught up in people telling stories about something weird that happened at the grocery store. And they're just mundane details, but those are the most fascinating to me.
You know, do you find it I find it frustrating that people have come to assume, a lot of people have come to assume that if you care about something, you must post about it on Facebook.
Right.
And it's become this clearinghouse for all your political views.
Yeah.
But I don't find that it changes anybody's mind, because mostly you're preaching to the choir.
Yeah.
Your friends list is probably on board with most of your stuff. And the ones that aren't, facts don't change people's minds anyway.
Nope,
personal relationships do. So it's like, I just think Facebook is better used, as my personal opinion, for positivity and weirdness and interesting things. And it's just like, but it's become this this sort of burden on you, among my friends anyway, to where, why aren't you posting about this? Don't you think it's important?
Right.
Believe me, I have plenty of opinions, and I will share them with you. But I think this idea that Facebook has this one purpose, it's sort of morphed into that. I find it frustrating, just memes and political.
Yeah,
you're not really taking a stand for anything, I don't think.
No, it's more of a feel-good thing.
When I do this. If it makes people feel good, who am I to judge? It's just it's an invented thing. Use it how you want.
Yeah.
But I mean, for me, it's just that it's lost all charm in terms of any sort of political discourse or anything like that.
Me too. But the weirdness is good.
Yeah.
And the telling stories about your life, kind of.
Yeah.
You know, like, as much as you want to. Like, I get the biggest, my fodder, as you know all too well, mostly, is my daughter.
Yeah.
And you know, as often as not, I'm just sort of telling daily stories from my life about her, and usually in the form of a picture and one or two snappy sentences, but which I didn't carefully consider at all, by the way, just rolled off that brilliantly. its own form of narcissism, but storytelling. I mean, how has storytelling kind of how does it dovetail in with what you do with what you do at UK as a professor? What's the crossroads between, say, storytelling and rhetoric?
So there's a few different things. One is, you know, usually whenever because writing rhetoric and digital studies is sort of a long thing to rattle off. And when somebody says, what do you do? I get this momentary panic. Like, if I just say, I teach rhetoric, then, boy, how long are we going to be here? And people's eyes glaze over. So usually I say, I teach writing.
Okay.
And then the first thing they say is, oh, like creative writing. And I say, well, yeah, kind of, although there is a great creative writing group at UK in the English department. But I end up saying, no, what we do is we tell true things. So the writing that I do is sort of like, you know, what you would dub nonfiction or something like that. But storytelling, you know, what's really strange is that if you look on Amazon right now for storytelling and business story for people who go into business and advertising, storytelling is a huge component of that. So corporations know this really well. They know that they have to tell a story of their brand. So if you're an advertising student, you'll end up hearing a lot about stories. And lawyers, for example, you know that you have to tell a good story if you're, you know, defending someone or prosecuting someone. And in all of these different ways, you know, if you're trying, I teach a class right now for basically technical writing, but students who want to go into, you know, different aspects of fields. And then I end up saying, I know this sounds weird, but, you know, if you're trying to really sell something, whether it's an idea or a product or, you know, some study that you've done, you've got to be able to kind of tell a story, tell either like, here's why this is important, or here's why you should care about it, here's why you should invest in this. And so storytelling kind of works its way into everything.
Story is rhetoric, too.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've gone together for thousands of years.
Have you ever watched Mad Men? Which
is like
Apartment 3G written by Camus.
Mad Men is all about telling stories.
Absolutely. And BS, since we mentioned that earlier, storytelling involves a certain amount of BS.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
The best kind of BSer is a good storyteller.
Exactly.
Yeah,
which is teaching, basically, also.
Yes. Yeah.
We're here with Jenny Rice and Leif Erickson, and we're going to come back. Let's take a little break, and we're going to come back and talk about I think we'll have news from the University of Kentucky Journalism Department. They look like they're still getting ready and finishing their snacks, but I'm going to make them come do the news anyway. So, and then we're going to come back and talk a little bit more. We're going to talk about the Horse's Mouth storytelling series.
Yes.
Which I know that...
which was also
Jenny
your
Rice's
name, by the way.
I will totally take credit for that.
Yeah, you played a huge role.
I come from an advertising background, but in some cases, like this was so easy. when we were sitting around talking about a name, yeah. I was just like, it's the horse's mouth.
Yeah, and
it's
like,
obviously
oh,
the horse's mouth.
That's so good.
And, you know, so it's nice when you can get off the hook that easy. That's why I don't do that anymore for a living, because, like, when you don't get off the hook easy, those are the times that it sucks. But but this was easy. So it's the perfect name for a storytelling festival in Kentucky. We're going to come back and talk about it. It starts on Sunday.
Sunday's
the first edition.
Yes.
So anyway, I've got a story. I love that kind of thing. When I was a kid, it was like science fiction music, like stories about the future.
Yeah.
And I was thinking about this the other day. I had this weird renaissance with, I'm just going to confess online, on the air that I won't confess to loving Styx, because I just loved Styx when I was a kid. But the other day, I had this weird, I don't know, this collision of events that caused me to listen to Paradise Theater, the Styx album.
Yeah.
Which I hadn't listened to it in 30 years, but it came out like right at the heyday of me starting to like music myself. And it's all a big story. And I realized that I look back at my childhood. At that time, there was a lot of domestic upheaval in my family. Mm-hmm. My parents were about to get divorced. And I saw for the first time ever that I was escaping through stories of music, basically.
Yeah.
And so I just wanted to, like, and ELO was in there too. So, so I just wanted to, like, kind of provide that transition to talk about how to get us back into storytelling a little bit, and how the idea for this festival, which I know has been kind of like an ember in your brain for a number of years, and it's come to fruition now, the Horse's Mouth Storytelling Festival that's coming up. Jenny Rice is here, by the way. Woo-hoo. That's who we're talking to. And Leif Erickson.
Hello.
So, I mean, so for me, I always, I was thinking about this while I was getting ready to come here this morning, about how even when I was a kid, I had this this weird obsession with listening. You would call it eavesdropping, but it wasn't even like, you know, it's kind of salacious, but I just loved hearing people beside me talk and interact and try to imagine, you know, their relationship and what they were talking about.
This was just yesterday, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I do. I still do it all the time. I love hearing people's conversations, and it doesn't even have to be anything interesting. There's something about getting little glimpses into other people's lives. And I don't even mean in, you know, like horrible events, big events, but because I think it's important for us. It's cliche to say that, you know, well, we're disconnected, because I don't think that we're any less connected or disconnected than we ever have been. But I think to a certain extent, as humans, you know, we have this innate desire to just kind of connect with people in some way, even if you're really shy, maybe especially if you're an introvert and very shy, you kind of want to know, like, there's a part of you that somehow relates to a piece of me. And when you hear people's stories, you get some of that. When I got older and I started hearing, I love This American Life, for example, when I first heard that show, I fell in love with it, because it's just a lot of storytelling, and sometimes they're very dramatic things, and sometimes it's not. It's just people telling about, you know, just you know, what you might even say mundane, but it's the way they tell it, the insight that they have into it. It kind of makes you feel less alone in the world in some way, that other people have experiences. And I think especially if you're a cynic, so I tend to be kind of a cynic sometimes about people, you know, you'll find somebody who's like seems very boring, or somebody you wouldn't normally kind of reach out to. And then you get this glimpse into something that happened, and it changes your whole perception of them. Like, wow, you are you're interesting. You know, and they don't even know it always. People will say,
my wife has a sort of a dead end icebreaker, I think she calls it. She used to, I haven't heard her say this in a long time, but if she ever found herself in a conversation that was just kind of, that it sort of dead ended, her next question would be, so do you have any pets? Which maybe, unlikely as it may seem, may lead to some personal revelation that connects people.
Storytelling is pretty ancient. It's how humans have like communicated for a long time. And I try to tell my students that writing on, you know, actual writing on paper is trying to wrestle storytelling to the ground, basically. Yeah. We've been telling stories orally so much longer than writing. Writing's still pretty new.
Yeah.
That's why I think people struggle with this. And it changes a lot, too. But it's trying to put code onto something that occurs organically and without any sort of code. It just happens.
Yeah.
So what is going to what's going to happen this weekend? The Horse's Mouth Storytelling Festival. This kind of comes as you've seen this sort of thing. Maybe all of us have seen this kind of thing happen mm-hmm. in a variety of locales.
Yeah.
You know, maybe first springing to life in some more metropolitan places, mm-hmm. but all over the place. And the idea yeah. here is with the Horse's Mouth Storytelling Festival, it's not necessarily the domain of, I don't know, what, like professional writers or
no,
something like this.
No, not at all. So if you're, you know, some people are familiar with the Moth Storytelling, which really is the biggest event. And this is about true stories. So people telling true stories about themselves. And usually at a lot of these happen, you know, all across the country, like you said, sometimes in bigger cities, but they're springing up all over.
It's a very social thing.
Too. Oh, yeah. And I think the key has to be that it's not people who do this for a living. But the idea is that everybody has some interesting story and they might not know it. So sometimes the theme, so for the Horse's Mouth, we'll have, it'll be once a month. It'll be on Sundays. The first one's this Sunday at 7 at the Parachute Factory. They'll always be at 7 at the Parachute Factory. Which is this really cool place on North Lyme and that area. And there's a theme each week. So each month. So this Sunday's theme is the first time, which because, you know, it's our first time to do this. and so, you know, initially that brings up like, oh, I don't want to tell my first time. Or like, no. This should be like a way to get you started thinking about telling a story of any kind of first time. And the beauty of that is that everybody has a first time for doing something, you know. So I'm going to tell a story about the first time I took a car out for a joyride, my parents' car when I was 14. another person telling a story, which I cannot wait to hear, is a friend of mine who grew up in the LDS church. He's going to tell a story about the first time he knocked on a door
as a
Mormon missionary. Okay. Yeah. And when he told me, I don't know the story, but when you told me that, I was like, I want to hear that, you know? And so it's just a lot of people telling about first times experiences. Our next event will be on October 30th, and that theme's going to be woulda, coulda, shoulda, which I think, again, was one of your... See, this now is sounding like this. You've put this whole thing together. But that was one of your suggestions, and I think
that came from... I give Lucy points credit for that.
Woulda, coulda, shoulda, which
we were brainstorming in the storm, in the car.
Yeah.
In one of the swirling text threads
you're
capable of creating.
But who doesn't have a story about, you know, woulda, coulda, shoulda? You know, that's... So these themes are all supposed to be... like to where anybody could tell a story about it. And it might take some time just to think about it. So we will usually have 6 storytellers and there'll be 10 minutes each. So 10 minute story. You can write it out ahead of time. You don't have to memorize it or anything like that. I'm not a good memorizer. Just, you know, write it out. And it's going to be the Parachute Factory, I think, is a really great place for it. It's
next door to Kentucky
space.
For Kentucky.
Yeah.
It's what I call the acute angle building.
It's
right on the other side of the railroad tracks on Limestone near Loudoun.
And it's going to be very, it's very low key. I know some people get very nervous thinking about it, but we wanted to keep it very informal, community based, comfortable, you know, so where you don't feel like you have to be professional. We're just there to hear the story, almost like sitting around with friends who you don't know yet, and you're telling the story.
And they're each 10 minutes? Each person gets 10 minutes?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In this case, it's not like open mic in the sense of like you already have the storytellers lined up.
Yeah.
But anyone can
absolutely
sort of toss their... Yeah. How do people, like, if people want to be in future events?
So anybody, if you want to go, so there's a Facebook group for this. There's also, if you want to go to, it's parachutefactorylex.com/storytelling, or you can look up on Facebook, Horse's Mouth Storytelling Series. And that gives you a little bit of a, you know, really, you can get the themes in advance. Just send me an email. My email is jenny.rice@uky.edu. If you want to tell a story, just say, hey, I want to do a story on this night, or I have an idea for a story. Where would it fit? I'm really hoping just to get all kinds of people don't. And if you're a little nervous about it, I think there's people who would be willing to say, "Hey, here's some ideas. Here's how to tell a story."
Mm-hmm.
I think the good way of telling a story is you kind of think about not necessarily what the story means, but sometimes like what's interesting about it. You know, you have this hook at the beginning.
Jenny Rice is here, and we're just about out of time, but I want to give people a chance to. The Horses and Mouse Storytelling Festival. It's Sunday at 6?
7.
7. 7.
Yeah, doors open at 7.
Yeah. Thanks for coming down. Thanks to Leif Erickson for coming down, too.
Thank you.
Democracy Now! Is blowing up right behind us, so...